ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm David Claughton with you for A Big Country. Let's catch up with our reporters on the road in regional Australia. This week we're heading to a nature-friendly farm where the dam is home to a happy and healthy population of platypus. The farm's owners are taking part in a citizen science project, counting platypus sightings to help researchers get a better idea of the numbers of the native mammal in the wild. We'll meet the father and son citrus growers who are not just picking fruit, but also the flowers from their trees to be used by distillers to give flavour and aroma to spirits. And we'll head to a small country town where a couple of farmers have taken over running the pub to keep it open. It's a big workload, but they say it's worth it to give the community a place to gather.
Do we need it? Probably not. But let's give it a crack and see how we go. What's a town without a pub?
That's coming up. First today, we're teeing off at a rustic private golf course in northwest WA. This course has few rules and no dress code, but players do get a warning about its challenging obstacles. Shirley Burns and her husband Fraser created the nine-hole golf course on their rural property outside of Broome more than 20 years ago. Now aged 86 and 92, the pair of golden golfers love nothing more than getting out each day for a relaxing hit around their garden, as Vanessa Mills discovered.
Beautiful.
There's nine holes, but they're double teed. That's number one, and that's number 10. So when we've been around the first time, the second time to go around, the second time around, we go that far over. And the second nine is a lot longer than the first nine. But it's approximately 1,000 metres with the two trips around.
92-year-old Fraser Burns and his wife Shirley are taking me round their large backyard outside Broome for a hit at their homemade Miss Tree Golf Club, so named because you have to miss the trees.
That is the tee there. The other tee is over here where all the yellow flowers on the ground.
So do you have to hit through these bushes?
And to get over the top, to get a hole in one, to come over the top, land on the ground here and just roll over and went in there. Bloody amazing.
That's incredible.
Before we had the pool, a lot of the ones that used to come out, they used to hit and land
hit
on the
roof.
And it used to roll down the roof onto the green.
So we banned them. two-stroke penalty if you put it on the roof.
Banned them. That was banned, you know.
So, Fraser, did you have to do any research about how to make a golf course?
No, you just made it up?
Just
made it up as I went. I reckon I probably could have made a big golf course. And this is where we hit off from. We tee up here and we got to go down to that flag. A lot of times we go in the shed, mind you. Free drop out of the shed if you go in there.
The couple moved from Perth to the 5-hectare block in 2001 after the former cray fishermen decided their favoured holiday destination of Broome should become their permanent home. And as they set about cleaning up the overgrown block, the idea for a golf course on the red Pindan soil was born.
I never started playing golf till I was 50. And I used to play at the Joondalup Country Club, if you know where that is. And it's a pretty posh place. And I was 007, that was my number. And Shirley went and joined and played there too. But she didn't like it because it's a very hilly course. She used to hit the ball up and the bloody thing rolled back down to the ground again. And she used to curse it and then she'd pick it up and take it up and throw it up there. So this course here is on flat ground. And because it's on flat ground, we call it Miss Tree because we left most of the trees around the place where we were playing. We only play with two clubs, a 7-iron and a putter. We came here, we got the golf course going, and then we used to have a lot of old friends come up, used to stop in the caravan park downtown, and they used to go to the bowling club, and there was a group of them. We used to have anything up to 30 would come out here once a week when they were here and play. We used to put a sausage sizzle on for them, and prize we used to get for people, and it was fantastic. If you spoke to any, of course, they're all passed on now. There's only a handful left.
And what's your handicap for the course, Fraser?
6.
And Shirley, are you a better golfer now?
Well, no.
She's better than me now.
Yeah, no. At the moment I can probably beat him, but not before.
Do you hit holes in one on your golf course?
I would have done near enough to twice around the course, hole in one. The only one I haven't holed twice is the back lawn one. And that's a very hard shot because if you see where it's got to come from and you've got to get onto the lawn, I was just lucky enough the day I got the hole in one there, came over the trees, landed on the ground and ran and straight down the hole.
Every hole is a chance of a hole in one.
There's obstacles come up in front of you.
Few of our
sure, he goes around and plants a tree somewhere. And where's it be? Right on line. Well, over there.
One of the friends always used to come out and reckon he was going to bring a chainsaw. So we banned that.
What a shot!
The couple credit the golf course and all the maintenance of the garden for keeping them fit.
It's definitely good exercise, but it's good exercise just looking after 5 acres every day.
And do you think it keeps you fit, all the maintenance and the golf?
Yes, I think that keeps me going. It keeps the mind working and it keeps me mobile. And I think that's the main thing now after having a couple of minor strokes.
Is your physio impressed you play golf?
He plays golf too. Yes, he is. He said I'm a marvel.
Look, you've even raked the dirt.
Oh,
do
yeah.
Do you Shirley, both do
Shirley's
this?
Shirley's been raking a lot. This is what our greens look like.
Oh, they're great greens. They look really nice.
Yeah,
they're ideal for out here.
Not all as good as this one. This is a good green.
What are your biggest challenges? Do you have cutworm? Do you have wallabies?
No wallabies in here, no. We don't have any ants are the worst thing. This is what the ants do. They push up these little mounds. And if you hit a ball across, you hit that, and of course your ball doesn't go to where you want it to go. We go up to that flag up there.
What do I love about living here? I like that there's no... You can look out the window and see all your garden... No neighbours.
That
yep,
me.
Yep. No, that's one of them.
That's well down the list, Fraser.
Yeah, yeah.
The lifestyle we're living in is the way to go.
You missed that one.
I'm pretty close, though.
Matt Tack, who farms with Corrine Ung at the foothills of the Harz Mountains in Tasmania's far south, says spotting platypus is part of daily life.
On any sort of given day, when it's calm enough, when it's not windy like it is today, we can go out there and we can see, you know, 1, 2, sometimes 3 platypuses on the dam, which is just incredible. And you kind of judge what kind of day you're going to have, whether it's a 1 platypus day or a 3 platypus day, right? So. It always makes us smile when we go out there and we can see them.
Their property, Our Mates Farm, is a launch pad for the Platy Project, a national effort to try to get a handle on the numbers of platypus in waterways across Australia. Their irrigation dam hosts a family of very content platypus.
I've been, you know, from within a couple of metres of a platypus sitting on one of the logs on the far side of the dam, just giving itself a really good scratch, you know, and happily sit there, and it'll happily sit there, and I'll just sit there and I'll film it on the phone, and it'll happily sit there for 10 or 15 minutes. And then, like this morning when I was out there trying to film it, I was sneaking around the edge of the dam and he'd pop up and see me and he'd go straight down again, right?
According to Jess Abrahams, platypus expert at the Australian Conservation Foundation, Our Mates Farm is a model for nature-friendly farming, with native grasses on the banks of their dam and organic farming a perfect fit.
Because you're obviously doing something right. You're farming in a way that's nature-friendly. And, you know, we know that we can protect platypus in national parks, but we can't have national parks everywhere, as much as we might like to. We still need to grow all the food that we need. And so landowners and farmers have a critical role to play maintaining healthy ecosystems and biodiversity. Farmers manage more than 50% of the Australian landmass, so they've got a unique role to play making sure we have healthy waterways, because what we do on the land obviously affects what we do in the water.
But across Australia, platypus populations are struggling. A 2020 study led by the University of New South Wales found their habitat had shrunk by at least 22% over 30 years. And efforts to have the platypus listed as a threatened species have so far failed.
We nominated the platypus as a threatened species nationally nearly 5 years ago now, and the scientific community came back to us and said, listen, there's just not enough data to determine either way whether or not platypus meet the threshold. And I think it was like a 15% in population, 20% population decline over three generations. And so our application basically was rejected. So Platy Project was born in partnership with the University of New South Wales to collect the missing data needed to determine whether or not platypus are a threatened species.
That's where the Platy Project comes in.
We would love everyday Australians who live on the east coast, anywhere from Queensland to Tasmania, as far west as Adelaide, to visit a local creek or waterway. Dawn or dusk is the best time. Sit quietly by the riverbank and observe. Look for signs of platypus. That might be a V-shaped bow wave is the most telling sign.
Participants are asked to log sightings or the absence of them on the interactive Platy Project map. Every data point helps researchers build a clearer picture of platypus distribution and strengthen the case for their protection.
We love having them here. We do everything here with one eye on the wildlife and nature. Biodiversity is super important to what we do. We think there's a strength in that and a resilience that comes with having that. And the platypus for us is kind of almost like an indicator for us. We look at that and go, oh, we must be doing something right.
Tasmanian farmer Matt Tack, who's been taking part in a citizen science project counting platypus. He was speaking to reporter Fiona Breen. Before that, Vanessa Mills took us to Shirley and Fraser Burns' garden golf course, and you can see more on that story, including pictures of the couple playing around on their unique course, and you'll find those on the ABC homepage at abc.net.au. I'm David Claughton with you for A Big Country. Still to come, the father-son team growing citrus blossoms for cocktails. And running a country pub is a big job, but try doing it while running a farm at the same time. That's exactly what farmers Karen and Rowan Alcock have done in their town of Bemboka, nearly 500 kilometres south of Sydney on the New South Wales far south coast. Adrian Reardon has the story.
A bit quiet, please, everyone. Just got 1 hour left of the Lions raffles. Free tickets, $5, 10 prizes tonight. If everyone can head over to the corner, Lions table at the bar, get your tickets, that'd be great. Thank you. Drawn at 7 o'clock. 10 prizes.
It's pretty busy. It's quite a busy night. It's I think it's only about 6:45, so this is probably as busy as I've seen it in about 30 years, I reckon.
Meet Rowan Alcock. He and his wife Karen have bought the Bemboka pub. It's the only pub in the town of about 600 people, with the next closest one in Bega, 35 kilometres away. Locals feared their pub wouldn't reopen after spending 6 months on the market without a buyer, until Karen and Rowan stepped up to the plate.
Well, generally Karen runs down to the pub and tries to keep the hotel going, managing the hotel. Yeah. And I'll kickstart my day off here and get a few jobs done and then try and go outside and work, which hasn't been much outside work lately because of the hotel.
As well as being publicans, Karen and Rowan run a 526-hectare cattle farm. It's certainly been a juggle.
We do as much as we can here, do a fair bit here and head torches. There's a lot of catching up to do.
Over the last 3 months.
Yeah. And
we've spent very little time here on the property. Yeah. Really. Absolute essential things only.
Hey, he's going. Need a hand?
Their daughters decided to come home to help. 27-year-old agronomist Tash Alcock and her fiancé Sam are lending a hand.
We always joked about it. Mum always came up with the crazy idea that we'd buy a cafe or something or other in town, and we all had the skids on. We're like, no, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. It's a terrible idea. But when it all came down to it, we're like, yeah, no, I think we really should do this.
Their other daughter, 29-year-old Jacinta, flew home from Darwin to help with opening night.
I thought they were like joking to start with, but they had discussed it and we talked about it back and forth, and then one day they're just like, yeah, we're going to buy the pub. And I was like, okay, right, looks like we're all in, all hands on deck. So, yeah.
Why do you think they did decide to go ahead with this?
They know that the pub is such an integral part of the town. We're 40 minutes from Bega, but it can feel a lot further away than that. And it's a lot of little farms and people living out of town, so you can very easily get isolated, very easily, especially over COVID and during the bushfires. Well, especially after the bushfires, places like the pub were just integral.
The Yankees Gap bushfire swept through the region in 2018, burning along the Alcocks boundary. And then came Black Summer the next year.
It was about 10 acres left out of 1,300 that wasn't burnt. We only lost one horse, didn't lose any stock.
We were lucky in the regards that we didn't lose our houses, because there's three houses on this property. We didn't lose any of them. We lost quite a few sheds.
A lot of machinery.
Yeah.
All the irrigation.
Yeah.
There's about $1.3 million worth of damage that no insurance for.
Even before the fires, Bimboka's economy was suffering. Many businesses had closed. In the main street, you've got the pie shop and a post office, and that's about it. Karen and Rowan hope the pub will bring the town back to life.
The town used to be really booming. It had a lot of shops, had service stations, had a grocery store, all that sort of thing.
Two or three cafes at one stage.
Over time, things have just gone backwards and it's all got centralised, all the shopping back into Bega. Yeah, the little place is sort of struggling. Karen's tried to approach me a couple of times regarding buying a takeaway in town. One of the shops taking one over when it was shutting down, and I got howled down every time. I thought, no bloody way, we're not doing that. Like, that's you might as well go milking cows again.
Is that in the middle?
Yeah, go off a little bit.
That's it?
Yeah.
Back at the pub, the Alcocks are putting out their new signs and welcoming their first patrons.
How are you? Thanks, mate.
Great, wonderful.
It's got to work.
It will work.
The pub has stood in town for decades, but the Alcocks decided to renovate and make it a cafe as well.
We're going to go and have a coffee now.
There you go. You got your first victims coming in.
It's great.
It'll work, mate. It'll work.
Local Bimboka residents like Jenny Anderson are loving it.
Communities like this have to have somewhere to gather. You don't need to be a drinker. You might enjoy a good meal. You might enjoy a cup of coffee. And to be able to have that choice is really important in a community like this. So just wonderful to have locals by the pub, to have a local farming community come in and rescue us all. Yeah, really, really great.
Another local, Julie Ringland, agrees.
We're so excited. We need something like this in a small town. We've always had the bakery, which is great. We're so lucky to have them. But to have the pub open again, it's just great. It's just got a beautiful vibe. If you walk into it, it's home.
Even the town's oldest resident, 91-year-old Madeline Filmer, approves.
Oh, yes, I love coming and having a cup of tea or something. I'll have a beer as well, you know what I mean. I'm not ashamed to say it.
As challenging as it's going to be running a pub and a farm at the same time, Karen and Rowan know they've done the right thing.
We probably should have done it 10 years ago when we were a bit younger. But
yeah, I wouldn't recommend doing it now at their age.
But anyway, the aches and pains are, things are improving.
You feel the urge to get into hospitality, do it bloody 20 years earlier than we did.
Do it earlier than we have, yeah. This community needs this. Do we need it? Probably not. But let's give it a crack and see how we go.
Yeah.
What's a town without a pub?
And so this bit of rootstock, because it got damaged, that rootstock's taken off and grown now.
Alan Edwards could talk about lemons all day long. That's because he grew up on his family's citrus orchard in Victoria's Yarra Valley region.
My dad bought this property. He changed the variety of lemons over, and then so they've been in since about 1950.
And you have a lot of memories of picking growing up, spending a lot of time in the orchard?
Oh, hours and hours, and days and days and months and months.
Today, Alan runs the farm with the help of his son, Michael. When not working on his PhD research, Michael dabbles in growing quirky crops. But his latest project involves an unusual flower.
On the side, I grow some things for chefs and distillers. And in talking to distillers and getting to know them, they were interested in getting citrus blossoms. Initially, it was grapefruit, and now it's more lemons. So we're running a project this year to see how we can, if we can get what they need, and also basically to reduce the amount of fruit we have by picking the blossom before it becomes fruit. So that's the idea.
And so this trial involves one block of lemon trees. And so just talk me through what your plan is, and it involves renting out that block.
Yeah, exactly. So the distillers will rent that for a year. They will do the more manual work on this, which is cutting back the trees, and then we'll apply some fertilizer as a bit of an experiment in certain trees, and then we can see if that can induce more blossom per tree. But basically, we want to get the most amount of blossom from that field as possible, and we've got 300 trees, so I think they'll get what they need. They've got a year to do it, so I think it'll be okay.
Michael says it takes a gentle touch to harvest the blossoms.
The actual product is super delicate, and you know, it can be bruised. You have to pick it fresh because you're picking for aroma. So it's much like how the fragrance industry would think about growing something. So it's a bit different.
And there's quite a short harvest window as well for these blossoms?
Depending on the variety, so we have two or three varieties of lemons here. The main variety we grow is Eureka, so that will keep just producing blossoms throughout the year. With some of the other lemon trees that we tested, which was Meyer Lemon, they have a much shorter window, but lots of blossom. So there's always that as a backup, but the client really liked the Eureka, so that's what we'll go for.
Lauren Bonkowski is a co-founder of Marionette, a Victorian distillery specialising in produce-driven liqueurs.
There was a bit of a gap in the market. Everyone was making gin and whiskey, and we saw this big hole in the slightly less sexy category, which was fruit and nuts and these essential cocktail ingredients that we were using every day, but Australians weren't making them.
Ms. Bonkowski says they work with farmers across regional Victoria.
The most recent product we've made, Elderflower, that one we really ran around the state trying to find the right blossoms. It was quite an adventure because it's not a big industry. So that led us, you know, to the streets of Trentham with a forager. Usually it's a bit simpler. We've gone out to Mildura, is one of our main supplying areas where our oranges and our almonds are grown. We like to work directly with farmers. We don't buy it through co-ops, so that we can work with the farmers on the season in their schedules. And we do a lot of work to make sure that we can buy their second fruit on farmers' timelines, which has worked out really, really well for everyone.
Ms. Bonkowski says after discovering citrus blossoms, they were hooked. And they're at the heart of their latest experiment, an elderflower liqueur.
So we went out to the farm, and we were lucky enough for them to let us pick a whole lot of different citrus blossoms, and decided that the lemon blossom is much more gentle and sort of supports the flavour profile of the elderflower putting in the liqueur.
And is this the first time that you're using these blossoms?
Absolutely, yeah. Blossoms are much harder to work with than fruit. In different levels of distillation and maceration, the hardier fruit, so the citrus itself, has the most oil and they can really withstand maceration and really high-proof alcohol to draw out flavour, whereas blossoms are the complete opposite end of the spectrum, so you have to be really careful.
For Alan and Michael, this citrus blossom project hasn't always been straightforward.
I think it's a learning curve for both of us.
In what way?
Well, we have probably a little different ways of looking at things, so it's a bit of compromise between the two.
And Michael, what have you had to compromise on since working with your dad?
I do agree, we do things a little differently, but I think we understand the logic behind both. Maybe there's an age thing as well to do with that, because I'm willing to experiment more, obviously. Dad, a little bit less, but it's probably because he has the experience, which I really admire and absorb.
And Alan says he's glad to be farming as father and son.
As far as Michael experimenting is concerned, that's exactly what I was like. When my father was doing this and I was doing it, there was that different way of looking at things. And so I think it is good to experiment and use a little bit of nous and work it out for yourself what works best.
Yeah, you need to know what fails as well.
Every experiment has got a failure, but you've got to learn by your failures.
Alan Edwards, a lemon grower from Victoria's Yarra Valley. He was speaking with Faith Tabaluyan. Before that, we met the new owners of the Bemboka Pub on the New South Wales far south coast. You can read more on both those stories You'll find articles and pictures on the ABC homepage at abc.net.au. That's the show for today. I'm David Claughton. I'll be back next week with more great stories from the regions. Chat to you then.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.